Move to the next case of the morning, which is Maislimi v. Alberto Gonzalez.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Mr. Cola.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. You know, in order to be granted asylum, the petitioner must prove either past persecution or a well-founded fear of future persecution. In this case, we believe the petitioner and his family met both of those burdens. With regard to the issue of past persecution, we admit that the petitioner was not arrested or beaten in any way during the course of the events that occurred in Albania. However, we must look at his case in light of what transpired with other members similarly situated with him. He was a paid driver of the Democratic Party, which was in opposition in Albania at that time. He, along with other drivers, were singled out for attack by members of the Socialist Party. One other driver was arrested and beaten in police custody. Another driver had his son kidnapped. And then we have this petitioner.
The driver had what?
Had his son kidnapped. We have this particular petitioner received two threatening notes that he should leave the Democratic Party and leave his position with the Democratic Party. Based on that fact and based on what happened with the other individuals involved who in the same particular assignment as he had in Albania, being a driver for the Democratic Party, we believe he's met the past persecution requirement.
Now, is the Socialist Party coterminous or the same as the government?
The Socialist Party is no longer in power at this point.
I know, but I'm trying to figure this out. Everything's done by the Socialist Party.
Correct.
And obviously this persecution or whatever has to have some connection with the government.
Well, yeah,
not just criminals and political people. These are people that are supposed to be, at least the government is supposed to have some hand in this persecution, isn't it?
Yes, and that's where we come into Dr. Bernard Fisher's testimony and his expertise in this area, where he basically testified in it that the Socialist Party does use, in essence, thugs to enforce its position, and the government uses the Socialist Party and its thugs and its criminals to enforce its position and attack the opposition.
So they basically, control or direct these criminals, which that's how he refers to them, as carrying out their dirty work or something.
Correct, Your Honor. In this case, we don't have a situation where the socialists, where the government is coming in with police officers and attacking this individual. We have the government, through the party that's in control, using individuals to attack these individuals.
Well, since the Democratic Party has taken over, does that have changed conditions that we need to take notice of?
Well, yeah, there is clearly a definite change with regard to that, and we believe that the evidence will show that the Socialist Party is still using its tactics in revenge and attack revenge killings against the Democratic Party.
Revenge now is not on behalf of the government, is it?
It's not on behalf of the government, clearly, in this case, but it is a strong influence. We must remember that.
But they're out of power now.
I understand that, Your Honor, but they were entrenched in power for about 8 years in Albania.
Well, we reflect on what would happen if he goes back. It's more about what happened before.
Well, we have two things, what happened in the past and what's going to happen in the future.
Yeah, so
and
prospectively, we don't know. What are we looking at?
Okay. Well, we're looking at both, Your Honor. He was persecuted in the past, and we're looking at the future.
He avoided persecution in the past.
He did avoid persecution.
He got two letters. One, at least, is directed at him specifically, I guess, because it was put under his gate. The other one's in a parking lot of the Democratic Party, which maybe they knew his car, maybe they didn't. But other than that, but then he took off and got phony documents from Germany and came over here and then asked for asylum. And I'm just saying, for as far as fear of future persecution, his past persecution was avoided. Now the future persecution is under a different party.
I fully understand that, but this court and all the courts have held that if you have documented past persecution, it's on the government to rebut that assumption that you're entitled to asylum. At this point, at this juncture, we don't have any rebuttal from the government because that change in government occurred after this case was already decided. What would probably or should happen is this case be remanded in light of the changes. The government can put on their evidence. We can put on our evidence to show his past fear and his current fear at this point, even with the change in government, and then let the immigration judge and decide the case at that point.
Is it your argument that, for example, the Socialist Party candidates did not win election, but the Socialists still are using their former entrenched position to direct the police, for example, to take revenge?
Correct, General. The Democratic Party in this case that won power in Albania in July of 2005 won it by a coalition. And some of the coalition were former associates of the Socialist Party. And to a large extent, the Socialist Party had 8 years controlling the government, the police, the secret police. So a lot of Socialist Party members are entrenched. You know, at this point, I'm somewhat testifying, and I don't mean to do that. But since these questions are coming to light, the Socialist Party had 8 years to establish itself. The Democratic Party just recently received into power. And there's countless reports of what's going on in Albania right now. And if you want, I can give you, you know, the short history.
I'm just talking about the theory of your case, not what the facts are. But that's how you approach this, that the Socialists, even though they're not the party in power, in quote, they're part of a coalition, and they're using government officials, police officers, say, to secret police to carry out revenge and other acts.
They're using police, they're using secret police, and using basically hired thugs. That's our position. That's what would the fear that he has now at this point. With regard to the issue why the judge denied his claim in this case, was basically fell on credibility in this regard. And if you look at the credibility finding, it's based on two specific pieces of testimony. One was a newspaper article, and one was a attestation from the Democratic Party, which the judge apparently found some inconsistencies. And we would note they're not really inconsistencies, and if they are inconsistencies, they're not material inconsistencies, which would warrant a negative credibility finding in this case. Looking at the newspaper article came out 2 years after the petitioner had left Albania. It was written and published in an Albanian newspaper. Now, there are some discrepancies there. But I don't think they're of the caliber and of the nature which make the petitioner's case uncredible. They were small differences, whether or not he was in debt. He did admit that he received some kind of public assistance or some kind of welfare at one point, but he denied that he was under debt. There was issue of whether or not he was bruised, and the term of what bruised meant is a difference. There's some confusion with regard to that. So I don't think these are major inconsistencies which would cause the person to be found incredible. The next issue is this note with the Democratic Party. When the Democratic Party gave an attestation, said the petitioner was threatened in this case. It did not specifically refer to the two notes, but it made reference that he was threatened in this case. And again, these were drafted by other people 2 years after the fact, after the petitioner was already in the United States. The other issue is with regard to Dr. Bernard Fisher. Dr. Bernard Fisher testified clearly and credibly. He is clearly an expert in this area. And the judge in this case initially refused to even accept his testimony. This immigration judge was forced to take his testimony. And once he took the testimony, he arbitrarily threw it out the window. He decided that we're going to take the State Department position and just throw out what this noted expert said. The immigration judge, and it's page 33 of my brief, says, "The court must give deference to these reports," referring to the State Department report. There's no regulation, there's no case law, there's nothing in any book that says you must give deference to these State Department reports. And even this court, amongst other courts, has criticized the use of these State Department reports as the holy grail, so to speak. They are informative, they do provide information, but they're not subject to any kind of cross-examination. They're not subject to determining who wrote them, why they wrote them, their position, their leniencies, and so forth. Dr. Fisher came in, he testified, he was subject to cross-examination, and he presented his case. There was no basis in law or fact just to throw that out the window at this point.
When you said the second time, did he just take a statement, or did he actually testify?
The second time Dr. Fisher actually testified, over the phone.
Over the telephone?
Over the telephone.
Okay, because I have, whatever this is, some kind of a, says, I guess it's a letter to Judge Brejos. That was earlier, and they didn't accept that. Is that what that is?
Judge Brejos would not accept Dr. Fisher's testimony at all.
Yeah, at that time. So, what is this thing that this letter is that old
letter,
hat?
The letter's part of an affidavit that Dr. Fisher submitted.
Is that? But that was before he came in and testified personally.
The letter was, they sought to introduce it.
Yeah, that was the first round. Then it was sent back, and then he testified.
Then he testified, correct.
That is, this letter didn't mean anything.
Was it a proffer?
Well, they attempted to introduce a proffer, and Judge Brejos wouldn't accept it. And then on the second time...
Did the proffer include the letter that Judge Mannion's referring to?
Excuse me?
Did the proffer include the letter Judge Mannion's referring to?
I don't know off the top of my head at this point. I would have to look after that. But my understanding was the letter was sought to be introduced at the original hearing, was denied. Then they sought to introduce it again with the caveat that he would be allowed to testify. He was allowed to testify in this case, and he did present his testimony in this case. But once he did present the testimony, the judge, again, basically threw his testimony out the window, saying, for whatever reason, decided to give more credence to the State Department report. We have no objection to accepting the State Department report, but you must give a reason why it's more valued or more credible than Dr. Fisher's case. You just can't say we have to accept it as the judge did in this case.
So is his testimony in the record?
His testimony is in the record.
Okay. Then it's not this letter, then. It's the actual testimony.
It's actual testimony.
Transcript, okay.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Ms. Brady?
Good morning. May it please the court, I'm Sue L. Brady of the Department of Justice, representing the respondent in this case. This case is before the court on what is termed as an asylum-only case, meaning the petitioners were paroled in the United States for the sole purpose of adjudicating their asylum claim and are not entitled to any other relief under the Immigration and Nationality Act. As to their asylum claim, it also comes to the court after having been considered at three administrative levels. First, before an asylum officer of the former Immigration and Nationalization Service in a non-adversarial proceeding when he was not satisfied that their claim met the requirements for asylum. It was referred to the immigration judge, who did conduct two hearings, fully hearing their immigration claim, including at the final hearing the testimony of petitioner's expert. And then finally, the Board of Immigration Appeals, which decision reflects that it did consider the evidence that that was considered by the immigration judge, but for the reasons substantially given by the immigration judge, was not satisfied either that the case met the standards for asylum, withholding of removal, or cat protection. The case comes also to the court after a good deal of case law from this circuit that addresses each of the issues here, and we submit that there is no new issue for deciding. There is no new policy dispute presented by this case. The short and simple fact is that petitioners did not present a case of persecution within the meaning of the Immigration and Nationality Act. They presented the testimony, if believed, by the lead petitioner that he received two anonymous notes spaced over a month during a very active political campaign in Albania. He did not know who wrote the notes. He was not threatened, neither he nor his family faced any imminent harm from the notes. And as to the point which Your Honor was making a moment ago, he could not tie the notes to the government as opposed either to the Socialist Party that was in power at the time or to what has been termed as thugs, who might either at the behest of some party members or on their own go after people that they deem to have an opposing political view. On this basis alone, they could not establish persecution, even before we leap ahead to the issue whether they were able to establish a well-founded fear of persecution. Their well-founded fear claim also has to be based on a claim of persecution that's recognized under the Act. This court has construed cases involving threats, and it has held, I think, in the Boykov case, that in general, threats alone do not amount to persecution. It has also considered what we might call threat plus cases. For example, in one case, a threat made while a gun was being held to an individual's head, or a threat, say, made by police authorities clearly aligned with the government and obviously with some apparent attempt to carry out a threat of bodily harm. Those are not the circumstances presented by petitioners.
As far as these drivers are concerned, I don't know how many there are, but he refers to a kidnapping of the son of a driver and then some other thing that happens to drivers. What's in the record as far as drivers or perhaps any other aid to the other party as far as what happened to them? Is there evidence of somebody really getting killed or
No, the evidence is substantially, as Mr. Kohler presented, that petitioner testified that other drivers had been subjected to harm. However, he did not corroborate those claims. There was no evidence of those claims. He presented, for example, a statement from the Democratic Party chief in Tirana in evidence at his hearing, but he presented no such corroborating evidence about any such claims against drivers. Also, the government does not concede that drivers for the Democratic Party in Albania would necessarily constitute a particular social group. We understood petitioner's claim to be that because he supported the ideals of the Democratic Party, he was subjected to persecution. So drivers, per se, would not be the relevant inquiry. But in direct answer, no, there was no evidence of such harm or intimidation of other drivers.
Well, as far as being, this is curious, since this is part of this letter, which may or may not even be relevant at this point. It says the notes received by Mr. Mislimi. How do you pronounce his name? Mislimi?
I'd be guessing, Your Honor. Mislimi.
Right. It should not be taken lightly, since Albanians don't make idle threat. It is a society where clan or political feuds last centuries, and where political differences are viewed as a basis for violence. The slightest insult or even opposition to a political view are taken as a pretext for violence. It's kind of a broad statement there for centuries, but I guess I'm looking for some evidence in the record that somebody really does, just because they are an active member of the other party, gets assaulted or tortured or something by the government.
No, and that is in dispute in the case, Your Honor, because a respondent submits that the evidence in the record was to the contrary, meaning there was no evidence after, say, the difficulties leading up to the 1997 elections and going forward, that there was no such evidence of murders or mistreatment or an organized campaign, say, by the Socialist Party or the Socialist government to go after political opponents. And in fact, the petitioner's expert really makes a case such that the political turmoil in Albania has been such that virtually anybody who aligned with any political party would be at risk. But that, of course, is not the standard for persecution. This petitioner must show that he individually was targeted, especially since he cannot prove a pattern or practice, in which case he wouldn't have to show the individualized harm. So we
change in is the fact that the Democratic Party is now in charge, even though it may be some sort of a coalition government. Does that change things here?
We submit that it does, but much in the same way that events were developing around the time petitioner left Albania and even to the present, it has been a very viable, active, at times acrimonious political process in Albania going toward democracy. But certainly, as Your Honor's questions brought out earlier, with the Democratic Party in power now, petitioner is hard-pressed to make the claim that he would be subjected to persecution by the government, which, as you know, is a requirement for eligibility for asylum. So it certainly would be relevant. But we submit that the record that was before both the immigration judge and the Board of Immigration Appeals was enough to show this is not a claim of persecution which lends itself to a finding of a well-founded fear of future persecution. The other issue is that petitioners have glossed over the judge's credibility findings. The article that Petitioner's Counsel referenced is very important because petitioner said at one point in the testimony he wrote the article and that everything in it was correct. When government counsel pressed him at the hearing about inconsistencies and contradictions, such as the article saying he'd been beaten and had bruises when he testified he had not, at that point, petitioner, if you will, dissembled and claimed that somebody else wrote the article and must have written it that way. So even if we assume, all right, that the article was written by someone else and apparently has inaccuracies in it, at one point in his testimony, petitioner said he wrote it. So we still are confronted, the IJ immigration judge was confronted with the situation of petitioners saying two contradictory and irreconcilable statements during the same testimony. That supports an adverse credibility finding if there ever was one. And then the issue about the article, the statement from the Democratic Party leader in Tirana, Petitioner presented that in support of his claim of persecution that caused him to flee, not just alone from Albania, to bring his entire family from Albania. The statement made not a single mention that he had actually been tortured. And the statement is important in that regard because petitioner testified that he showed the two notes to the person who entered, who made the attestation. So that person, having seen the notes, who petitioner even testified paid to have the window repaired when a note was thrown into his government car, his party car, did not mention that petitioner had actually been subjected to harm. And that was another reason for the IJ to have doubts about his credibility. Given those doubts, it was entirely proper for the immigration judge to next consider whether there was corroboration in the record. And he found, of course, that there was none. Petitioner had also testified he showed the note, the one note to his wife, and he told her about both of the notes. Petitioner's wife was at the hearing and did not testify, did not even put in an affidavit confirming that he received such notes. But the overriding issue, Your Honors, we would submit is that the case law from this circuit simply does not establish that this is persecution within the meaning of the Immigration and Nationality Act. Okay. Unless there are further questions, thank you.
Okay, thanks. Do you have any time left? Okay, apparently your time's expired. So this case will be taken under advisement.
Thank you.
Thanks to both parties.